Hi.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast, the show that makes Buckaroo Banzai references on a daily basis. I am Oscar, and with me today only is...
Luke.
What up, Luke? How's it going? Back again?
Good. Gonna be home soon, kind of excited.
When will you be home?
A couple more weeks, I think.
Nice. A couple more weeks? Okay. For good or for just a while until the next time?
For a little. Oh. Like a couple of weeks and then maybe go off somewhere.
Nice. All right. Well, this is episode number 47. And today's show, what we do normally is we review three shows. Three movies. And the movies on this roster today will be Ready Player One, which is Spielberg's latest film. An indie film that's out on VOD called I Kill Giants. And we're going to end our show with a review of our second film in our new marathon, which is what I'm calling the Alpha Classics Marathon. We'll explain what that is in a bit. It's we're going to review, what is it, 1942's It Happened One Night? I think that's the year it came out. Am I right?
I think it was the 30s.
Oh, 30s? Maybe I was wrong. Yeah, maybe you're right. 1934. Wow, I was off by like 8 years. I'm sorry. 1934. What was it? 1942.
You were only in your teens in that point.
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, it was a rough time for me back then. Anyway, you can follow the show and find us at our home base, at our website, otherpodcast.com, where you can find everything we've ever done and will ever do. And that includes bonus episodes, marathons in the past. We've done only one other marathon since we are a newish show. Not new, but, you know, whatever. And what else can we show on there? You know what today's, this month's bonus episode is, Luke? It's a movie you're about to watch, you were telling me earlier.
Isle of Dogs?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, right on.
I haven't recorded that yet. Do you want to do it with me?
I make no commitments.
Because Ralph, I don't think, wants to see it. He told me he's not really super interested in watching it. So, I mean, he'll watch it if I make him, you know?
Right. But, I don't know. I mean, ever since you and James turned me on to Wes Anderson, I'm like, yes, please.
Right, yeah. And I know you and James are probably the, give or take, bigger fans of Wes Anderson than even me. I like him a lot, for sure. I don't love him the way you guys do, but I do love a lot of his movies, for sure. Anyway, so that is the bonus episode. Find out how you can find that episode for this month if you wish to know. And the episode that's coming out that came out 5 months ago that's being released this month for a bonus episode is going to be Murder on the Orient Express. And that is a movie that Lexi, who's a friend of the show, did with me because no one had seen that movie that month. So, friend of the show, that's right. She's with me in this room, by the way, just completely interrupting me. Girlfriend of the show. I'm not going to say girlfriend of the show because you're not Luke's girlfriend.
We share her on weekends.
We share her on weekends. That's what Luke said. Nice. No, not nice. Awful. Get away from her. fucking creepy bastard. Let's see. What else are we going to do today? We're also going to talk about our recent discoveries. So let's get into that now, shall we? Luke, you said you haven't watched anything recently.
No, I don't think anything popped up. I've missed everything good that came out on HBO, like Paterno and the Andre the Giant documentary, so I gotta wait till...
Oh, yeah, I heard good things.
Connection.
Another friend of the show who did, who helped me out on Top 10 shows last year, Brian, if you remember him, he watched that recently. He told me today at work that he was very sad. He's like, this is a very sad movie. I'm like, is that good? I'm like, I guess. I'm like, okay.
Wait, Paterno or the Andre the
Giant? The Andre the Giant one.
Okay, that's what I figured.
He's a big wrestling fan, too, so that makes sense that he'd watch it. So, yeah, so I haven't seen it yet, but I've been behind on HBO shows and documentaries, like, way behind. I haven't seen, last 10, you know. Anyway, let's get into that, then. Since you don't have anything, I only have two movies, so it's gonna be nice and short. One of them is a movie called A Quiet Place, which is now in theaters, just came out last weekend. A Quiet Place is John Krasinski's, I don't know if his directorial debut, but it's definitely the first film of his I've seen. And he co-wrote it. He didn't write the story, but he co-wrote the screenplay with two other people, the two people that wrote the story. Anyway, whatever. And it stars him, as well as Emily Blunt, who, if I'm not mistaken, I heard this through the grapevine, meaning like people who I heard in podcasts, that they're actually married in real life, or they're together in real life, and they made this project together. And this is kind of like a like a Hollywood but indie roots kind of horror movie about this this family of five who are farming and living in the wilderness, post-apocalyptic world, where these creatures exist, and they only come out and are attracted to sound. So the entire movie, I mean, 80% to 90% of the movie is quiet.
Silence?
Yeah.
Ominous music playing?
Sometimes. They actually keep a lot of it, like, intact. Like, they only bring up the music when it's more or less vital to the, if something's about to happen, or when it's like, when the action's happening. So like when it's like already too late, you know, with the sound. But overall, it's very quiet, the whole movie. I mean, they have a few speaking lines when they could, but it's very rare. And they do mainly sign language and body language. So with that being said, it's a really effective horror movie because it takes out a lot of the elements that a typical horror movie would have to spend time talking to explain what these creatures are, what kind of world we live in, what their state of being is. You know, it takes a lot of like shitty dialogue that you could potentially have and save it for just like action and body language, like I was saying. So I think it does a really good job doing that, showing you a very good dramatic horror movie. It is PG-13. You were sending that before. It's funny. I didn't know it was PG-13 until you told me. And I was like, well, yeah, I guess I didn't see anything gory or anything like crazy like that. But
no,
I didn't,
boobs?
No boobs. But I didn't need it, though, because it's like very, very suspenseful. Like the suspense works a lot. I mean, the Emily Blunt's character is pregnant for most of the movie. And you know her water's going to break at the worst time. And it's funny because it doesn't happen.
Women are always an inconvenience.
Oh, that's just, see, this is why you're single. you just described why. Anyway. Yeah, so it doesn't happen the worst time, but like happening makes it the worst time. You know what I'm saying? So because she's gotta be quiet. How the fuck she's gonna stay quiet while the contractions and shit? Yeah, it's a very effective movie. It's really cool how they have to live this world in quiet and peace, basically forced peace, in order to survive. And it's amazing how much they were able to accomplish so far to survive so long. It's a really good movie. I liked it a lot. I recommend it. A Quiet Place, also a very great date movie. Have your girlfriend like tug at you and hold you. It's a good movie for that. And another movie. Here's another one. Here's another one for you daters out there. I saw Midnight Sun. Do you know this one, Luke?
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, I saw it for my girlfriend Lexi, friend of the show, Lexi. You're not girlfriend of the show. I know you are my girlfriend. Anyway, Midnight Sun. It's a movie about this girl. Played by Bella Thorne.
It's a ripoff of Everything, right? Except she can go outside. Just not.
I never saw Everything. Is that the same thing?
You know what? I actually have to. I did see that. It was on HBO nonstop.
Really?
I do have a movie. I rolled my eyes so hard. It was so stupid.
And you saw it?
Yes.
Well, then what makes you?
Look.
Why did you see it then if you thought it was stupid?
The remote was across the room, okay?
God. Oops. Another reason you're single. Ladies, not only does he hate you, Gaul, but he's also lazy.
I love the ladies.
I bet you do. Anyway, no, Midnight Sun is actually... Oh, I haven't seen Everything, so I can't say about that movie. But I guess it roughly is the same. Yeah, there are a lot of these... Not teen, because it's not teen. She's like graduating, going to go to college kind of age. So it's like whatever. But anyway, it's a classic... romance movie like The Notebook is, or like actually it's similar to The Notebook in the sense that the debilitating disease is like the big crowning point of the movie throughout,
right.
Yeah, and the actors are like super hotter than they probably should be in real life, but there you go, Bella Thorne. Oh my god, Alexis is so obsessed with that actress, that's why we saw it, and I knew we were gonna see it before she even fucking asked me, so it's fine with me. And the movie, for what it is, Luke, not as bad as you'd think it would be. Not as tear-jerky, like not as manipulative as it could have been. You know, a lot of those movies, they kind of like Spielberg in the old days kind of did, you know? He can make you cry when he wants you to. Like, he'll really tug at your strings. Now, he does it way better than anyone else. This movie doesn't match that level. But this movie doesn't, like, tug at your strings so hard as I thought it could be. Either that or I just became more heartless since the last movie I saw or something. I don't know. So I don't know. Take that for what you will. But it is a romance film that does its job very effectively, and there's, you know, big predicty thing at the end in the third act. There's a few endings actually to this movie, like three endings to the movie. I like the dad a lot. The actor who played the dad, I liked him a lot. He's always like in TV shows, like guest spots in TV shows. I never remember his name. I know you like Bella Thorne. Honey, we're not reviewing Midnight Sun today. I'm just giving my very mild opinions. Also, I'm not giving harsher opinions because you're here and you can hit me. But that's okay. I wish the acting was better, honestly. That's the real crux of the problem for me in this movie. Otherwise, it was whatever. It was good. So, those are the two movies I've seen. And Luke, you didn't see anything. Raph is not here. Let us move on, shall we, to our first review of the week, which is what movie, Luke?
I think we decided we're going to do Ready Player One.
Yes, we did. I just want to make sure you knew that. Anyway, let's find out what that movie's about.
My name's Wade Watts. My dad picked that name because it sounded like a superhero's alter ego, like Peter Parker or Bruce Banner. But he died when I was a kid. My mom, too. And I ended up here. Sitting here in my tiny corner of nowhere. There's nowhere left to go. Nowhere. Except the Oasis. A whole virtual universe. Let me take you on a trip. People come to the Oasis for all the things they can do. But they stay because of all the things they can be.
Can you feel this?
When the creator of a virtual reality world called the Oasis dies, he releases a video in which he challenges all Oasis users to find his Easter egg, which will give the finder his fortune.
Yep.
That's a horrible synopsis.
Did you say synopsis?
Yes.
Okay. So, Ready Player One, Steven Spielberg's latest movie. Before we get into the movie itself, do you have two questions? I know the answers to them already, but I'm going to ask them anyway. One is, what do you think of Steven Spielberg lately? Like, since the 2000s, let's say. Like, you know, he was big in the 70s, 80s, right? Bigger than that, he's still. But he's had a few, you know, ups and downs for sure. What do you think of him as a filmmaker these days?
I like him.
Still?
I mean, let me see. Let me go over his repertoire of...
Repertoire?
Let's see. Yeah. He's doing a West Side Story movie directing? Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay. It's in pre-production. Let's see. He did Lincoln. I like that.
Yeah, Lincoln was good. You like that movie?
Lincoln, yeah.
I mean, you hate movies that bore you to death. I figured that movie would bore you to death.
It's a biopic about fucking Lincoln.
Oh, my bad. I forgot that you overlook anything if it's a biopic.
And who plays Lincoln?
I know. Daniel Day-Lewis.
Daniel fucking Day-Lewis. That's right. Let's see. Munich, World of the World. The Terminal is awesome.
I believe it's pronounced Munich.
Whatever. Okay. Minority Report, AI. Yeah, there's...
Okay. So I guess you like him. So, the other question I have for you
is... I haven't seen most of the recent... I mean, I saw the post. I like that. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen BFG or Bridge of Spies or War Horse. I'm never going to go see War Horse.
War Horse is... talk about tear jerky, as I was saying before. That one tugs at your strings only with a horse.
Yeah, it's a stupid horse.
No, it's good. That whole barbed wire scene. Fucked up. Anyway. Bridge of Spies is fun. You should watch that movie. I like that movie quite a bit. Did not see the BFG. The post sucks for me. For a lot of reasons.
You didn't like it?
No. I like things in it, but not really the movie itself.
Right, yeah. I think we talked about this.
Yeah, we did. Anyway. So, my second question. Again, I know the answer to it already. Did you read the book, Ready Player One?
Yes, I read the book. I've actually also met Ernest Cline, the author of the book, and I've read his second book, Armada, and I'm a huge fan of the first movie that he wrote, which was Fanboys.
Oh, I didn't know he did that. No wonder you're such a fake... No wonder you talk about that movie.
If you ever come across a script for a second Buckaroo Banzai movie, Ernest Cline wrote that, and because people liked it so much, they kind of like put it in circulation.
Oh, you mean to sell copies of the script?
like he did it as like a fan thing, and then like I guess it kind of blew up a little because he told me like he was at like a convention and somebody was selling it, and he's like, "Hey, I wrote this," and he's like, "Oh, cool, you want to sign it so I can sell it for more money?"
Oh my god, he didn't even get credit for it. It was not credit, but I'm saying like he didn't get like royalties off it. That's fine. Okay, so it seems like you're a fan of the man who wrote the book. Are you a bigger fan of the author or the director in this case?
The author.
Okay. See, I'm more of a director. So the reason I wanted to see this, I'm not an Ernest Cline fan, nor have I read this book, nor do I have an intention to read this book. And this book, by all of its genre and subgenre themes and the way it's about the 80s and references a lot of the 80s, despite, you know, even with all that stuff, which is hot button stuff for me, these are things that I love. They do push my geek-ass buttons, my nerd buttons, right? These things do that really well. However, everything I've heard, and I tried reading the book once, 2-3 years ago, I want to say, maybe more, I don't remember. I couldn't get into it, and everything I hear about it, like, it just makes me less appeal to it, so whatever. I figured, whatever, I'll watch it, because it has this weird, from the trailers, of course, I mean, the trailers have been everywhere. Ready Player One looked like a really nice, it looked like it could be anyway, a really awesome mashup of all these crazy things that I know from comic books, movies, television shows, anything like cartoons, right? I love the idea of actually mashing up real life, historical from my childhood or even present day things into one movie with a world building thing around it. And that's why I wanted to see it. The Spielberg angle was definitely is also a reason, but his last few movies, like I was saying, like you know, I didn't like The Post and City of BFG, whatever.
Right.
It's not like he has exactly like you know warm me up to his action stuff. Or he's kind of an old man too. I don't see how much to the pulse of current pop culture can he have. You know, so I didn't really put that much thought into it.
He was born in 1972. He was like growing up.
Did you say he was born 80s. In 1972?
Yeah.
Spielberg?
Oh, I'm talking about Ernest Cline, sorry.
No. Spielberg. Spielberg's the oldest. But he was making movies in 1972.
Yeah, Spielberg was born in 1946.
Yeah. Okay, he wasn't making movies in 72, but I think he was around there, yeah. He's not that far off. Okay. Despite all that, anyway, so I want to see it for that reason. I've always wanted to see a movie that combined things like this. You know, one of my biggest favorite movies of all time, not of all time, but the most fun I ever had in a movie theater, let's say, is Cabin in the Woods, right? I mention this movie often in conversation.
Oh, yeah.
And
it's a great movie.
That movie would have been, how much more awesome would that movie be if they had the rights to use horror characters from our own childhood?
Oh, like the legit ones?
Yeah, the legit ones, instead of making great. The knockoffs. And don't worry, I mean, don't get me wrong, the movie worked awesomely without them, but it would have worked that much better if they had the rights to use them. And Spielberg is the kind of man, one of the very few men ever in Hollywood, maybe him and James Cameron, who have the clout to borrow from all these places and get the permissions and the rights without costing $1 trillion, you know? So I liked that this movie exists for that reason alone. So that's what got me hyped. And I didn't know what the story was going to be about. But that being said, what is your first impressions, Luke, finally, of this movie?
My dick could only have gotten so hard.
Oh my god. He just went
dirty. I loved it. Oh, dude, it was amazing. It was like just everything was so awesome. Trying to find like every little cameo, every little hidden thing. Oh, I can't wait to rewatch it.
Okay, wow. Have you rewatched it since, or you just saw it once?
No, I just saw it once.
Okay. So you're not a real true fan then?
Shut up. I already pre-ordered the movie in 4K.
Of course. I don't expect anything less out of you. I may watch this again in a Blu-ray setting because definitely the money's on the screen. So
definitely.
I guess you just said your first quick impression there. And mine is that I liked the movie quite a bit. There were some parts of it that I felt genuinely exhilarated by, like in a good way, obviously, because, you know, why would you get exhilarated over a bad thing? So, yeah, the movie has a lot of positives, but it also has a lot of negatives for me. So the movie is good, but not very good or not great or anything. It doesn't surpass any, you know, it didn't give me a nerd boner either, but it almost did, though. You know what I'm saying? with some of those references and some of the action and some of the stuff that happens in the movie. But I really liked I liked a lot of this one big theme that the movie has. And I don't know if it's on purpose or not, but we'll get to it eventually. So tell me stuff about this movie that you like without spoiling yet, obviously.
I mean, the whole movie is pretty much just like this whole entire mash of like 80s pop culture and everything on top of like all the new IPs that they were able to pull into the movie franchise. I mean, for anything from like Overwatch and Halo to freaking Dungeons and Dragons and, you know, Atari, it's all there. Fucking The Shining.
Oh, yeah. I mean, let's not spoil The Shining quite yet, but yeah, there's a big Shining reference in this movie. That was cool. That was very cool.
Okay.
So, I mean, what do you think of the, I mean, like, the main plot? So, this movie has a big adventure attached to one person. It's this kid who lives, like, in the boondocks. But not really, I guess, but kind of the, like, in a bad, right. like a souped-up trailer park.
Yeah, pretty much.
The stacks, they call it?
Right? Yeah, the stacks, because yeah. There's a bunch of, like, trailer homes stacked up on top of each other.
Right. Actually, because I like the opening where he's like going down it, you know?
Yeah.
I like that. That was a very fast way to set up the world where this world where not only does he live in this trailer park plus, right? But he, every time he walks by or drops down by a window, you see how everyone's reacting and is always on this thing called the Oasis, which is like a second home. To a lot of people, the first home of that isn't reality, you know? So it tells you a lot about how the world is distracted by or is putting all their attention and energy into this new world economy, this game called the Oasis. So I liked it. It was a very efficient, nice, cool way to do it. I like that opening. I didn't like the very beginning so much. It explained a lot, but I guess they needed to explain a lot of the movie in the opening. You know?
Like his parents died, and they had like you know, right. I guess the corn syrup thing ran out, so people died of poverty and starvation and all kinds of stuff.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they had to. I guess they had to explain a lot without you know before they even start the movie. So I guess I can't fault them too much. But I'm glad they got it out of the way, though. I guess it was the first 2 minutes, and that's it. So, what did you think of the kid in his arc? Well, I forgot his name. You remember his name?
Parzival.
Oh, yeah. That's his avatar name, right? Yeah. All right. So, what did you think of the kid? Because he's in almost every scene.
His name was Wade Watts.
Yeah, Wade. That's WW. Right. Yeah. By the way, very superhero name.
Then, thus goes his father wanted him to have a name like that.
Yeah, like an alter ego name. Anyway. So, yeah. What did you think of him?
I like them. I only have, like, they kind of did change him a little bit from the books, obviously, but, yeah, he's pretty much exactly what he was supposed to be, just this kid that just wanted to have a good time in the Oasis and tried to find, the keys and kind of, you know, take over.
All right, so he was convincing to you as a...
Yeah.
Kind of... Because I think the movie's trying to portray him to be like, you know, a semi-maladjusted kid. You know, not shady, but like corruptible background. Like, you know, a lot of bad stuff. Like he's living with his, is it the aunt? An aunt of his?
Right? It's the aunt, yeah.
And she has like shitty-ass boyfriend after boyfriend kind of deal.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of that did work to an extent. I feel like the movie... the movie's first big fail is that they don't actually do character development very well in this movie. Like, I don't think he progresses in a believable way, or if he does at all. Because some of the progressions that a character or human being will need to convince me and other audiences, I assume, that he would do certain things as the movie goes on, or he wouldn't do certain things, right? It seems like he's either too naive or too bold, and I feel like the movie doesn't try to shade in the gray of why he's doing these things, or how is he looking at himself when he does these things. Like, you know, I feel like it feels like it's just there because the script is telling him, you know, like... I'm not saying the actor is bad. I forgot his name, but Wade is the actor who's playing Wade. He's okay. He's pretty good. He's not bad. I've seen worse. Shia LaBeouf in Indiana Jones 4 was probably worse. You know, but to name another Spielberg movie. But I just feel like there isn't enough there for me to grasp on, and there's nothing to relate to with the kid because
you're old.
Because of those missing, I'm just gonna skip over that. Because of the missing gray shades of development, yeah, of character.
You know,
building,
I get that coming from the movie. There's very little character development, but I think I've been filling a lot of that in with what I know from the book. So,
Yeah. Well, I mean, a book always has more time.
So that's
to explain.
Kind of the thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
The movie's kind of just like the shortened version of the book. So,
is the book it takes place in his own head as a first person?
Mm-hmm. It's first person.
Okay. Well, that explains a lot. Okay. So you were able to marry both properties to fill in the gaps of this movie.
Yeah.
Well, I also heard, without spoiling too much of the book or the movie, I also heard that there's a lot of a lot of changes, even 180 changes in the movie from the book.
Oh yeah, right off the bat.
But does that affect what the person, what Wade is supposed to be doing or thinking or feeling? You know what I'm saying? Like, does it make a difference or no?
I don't think so.
Okay, I was just curious
because I mean it's still. The premise is the same, you know, the three keys and whatnot, and then he gets like the one little thing later that helps him, and it's still the same. It just how it happens is different,
right?
And there's just different scenarios.
Gotcha.
And I think it could be just because trying to license all the stuff that was in the book was probably a fucking nightmare.
Oh, you're saying there was even more challenges from the book that they couldn't do? Okay, that you think they could
I think
do?
So. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure this movie was a licensing nightmare in general. So whatever the property they could get on, they took. Whatever they couldn't, whatever.
Yeah. Okay. I understand. I feel like if I read the book, you know, I've read many books and I've seen the movies that come to them. Sometimes I read the book after I've seen the movie. You know, there are many times where I've seen both or sometimes I don't see the other or whatever. So I've been around the spectrum, right? I've been in a situation where I can relate to a movie better because I read the book, but most times it's because I've read the book and I hate the movie. You know, I think this movie still fails if it doesn't succeed in putting in that valuable development of a character, and in a seamless or a better way. If you haven't read the book, because you know that still sucks, though. It's still a mistake of the movie. But let's go beyond that. What did you, how did you feel about the rendering of this world? Like, not just the money. I know there's a lot of CGI and there's a lot of whatever, but what did you think of, like, the way the world is portrayed to you and how everything is discovered, how the action takes place? What did you think of the atmosphere of this film and how everything looks and feels?
The only things I kind of had an issue with was the whole like war world where people just like going crazy and just like, you know, killing shit.
Oh, like a massive brawl. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, that's kind of cool. And even though that was not in the book, I could definitely see something like that being, you know, there. Mm-hmm.
I guess that's a more important question. Can you see a real life version of this oasis in our world?
I can pray every day.
No. Can you see it happening the way the movie is showing you? That's what I'm saying.
It would take a lot of time.
No. It's a yes or a no question. Can you see it?
I can hope it.
No. Oh, my God. I'm gonna kill you. I'm going to travel to wherever you are and murder you. I'm saying, is it plausible? Can you believe this world can exist? Not saying when or how much it'll take. Yeah, okay. That's all I was asking. I think part of it is definitely yes. There's a lot of game culture, and also not, because this is beyond a game. I know that it's a game. The Oasis is this what it began as a game, but even though it still is, but the fact that everyone lives on it and everyone works there, everyone like jail in many ways, debt is repaid by going in there. things like that, you know. And you told me from the book, off air, that in the book that he goes to school in the Oasis, things like that. It's not a game either. It's a way of life. It's a way of digital life that isn't real, but it's because it's so important, it becomes more real than it maybe should, you know. I guess that's kind of one of the little themes or little lessons from the movie. I'm not sure if that's in the book, but maybe it is. And I think that I can see an obsession of the world doing that kind of thing. I'm not sure if it's quite this way. I feel like a lot of details could have been represented better. Like, you know, the difference between, I don't know, like, you know, Mad Max Fury Road. Like, you can tell so much from the details of that movie, how these people are living without ever having to explain shit to you. I feel like that... Right. I feel like that movie does a way better job of world building in a post-apocalyptic setting than this movie does. But this movie doesn't do a bad job either. So I guess I'm like 50-50 on it. It's pretty good. Some of it really works. I also really like the world a lot. It was a lot of fun. It feels like every time you enter a world, or even if it's like a boardroom setting, or when they go to a library, which is just, you know, library kind of mundane information kind of thing. And not to mention the racing and all the other shit. Like, it feels like just like awesome heaven, awesome. Like, just, it feels like too much fun.
It is. It's, the whole movie is just super fun.
Yeah. I think the movie really wants to invite you into this world and imagine it for your own. Like, the movie does a good job. This is where Spielberg's, you know, magic comes in, because he's really good at world building overall and making you feel the sense of adventure, you know, from his own movies. And I think he does a really good job. He makes you want to be in that world. He makes you want to think of what would your avatar look like. He makes you feel, he makes you ask those questions like, will you drive the DeLorean? Would you drive a Mad Max car? Will you drive a Hot Wheels car? You know, like, you know, it makes you wonder and think of those things as you're watching these
characters. The bike from Akira?
Yeah. Oh my God. That's mine right there. And there are some, and it's funny because they add some stakes into the movie, you know, for example, like the fact that your avatar can be killed. Obviously, you're not going to die. It's not like Freddy Krueger or anything. But what happens is that you have to spend money to get that character back. And the only way to earn more money is to be playing in the game, doing things, work or play contests or, right? So this movie does have some stakes where people don't, I forget what they call it in the movie, but, you know, you don't, you know, you lose.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're going to lose your avatar.
Right.
I forgot. They named it something. But they do have some mild to big stakes in the movie regarding that kind of thing. So the movie does a good job. It's good world building, good fun, adventure setting. I really liked it. I really liked that first race. The first racing, the first task is pretty goddamn cool. I loved it a lot. It's like, Of course it's going to be Manhattan, and of course it's going to be like a combination of King Kong and T-Rexes and shit. Like, it just... It
was everything there.
Yeah. And some of those traps along the streets felt like a Mario trap setting, like one of those Mario worlds. And all these cars are just jumping and killing each other to get there, and it's really cool. It feels like also impossible to finish. What?
Zeroed out. That's what it was.
What'd they call it?
Zeroed out.
That's right. Yeah, I really love that first action scene. I honestly don't think any... there's a few moments definitely that I think are way better in different ways, like my geek nerd boner in a way, right, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Rose there. But I think as an overall action sequence, I think the race scene is my favorite from how much it exhilarated me. Like, I felt the rush that I'm sure these fake, you know, these actors were feeling in the fake soundstage, you know. So I think I liked it for that reason. But what'd you think of, what's the girl's name in the movie? I forget.
Artemis.
She's our second fiddle. What'd you think of her?
They kind of...
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I liked her. I do think Artemis plays a kind of big role in, like, or Samantha... That's her real name. Like, she plays kind of a role in, like, getting Wade to kind of, like, grow the fuck up. Because, like, she's also, like, a gunter, which is the hunter, you know, game hunter. And she really wants to save the Oasis from the like evil corporations that, you know, want to just take over it, you know, that being the grand prize, and just kind of manipulate it and use it for profit. Where for her, she feels it should still be like a free thing for anyone that can enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, I liked her cause for sure. She has a very, like, a rebel, you know, with the anti-corporation type thing. Well, I mean, that brings it up to the thing. The main thing about this movie is that there's this competing corporation that just has a lot of numbers and bodies that add to try to finish this quest thing so they can own the rights to this game. And in order so they can put more ads, you know, I really didn't like that scene. Even
ads
though,
and microtransactions.
Microtransactions, that's right. Ads everywhere, and you have to pay to get rid of the ads, that kind of thing. Check your Hulus, for example. I didn't like it, but also, like, that's exactly what they do, you know? I feel like it feels like a Black Mirror, like, episode. You know that episode where they go into the future with the bike?
I still haven't seen anything of Black Mirror.
All right.
I should.
I keep forgetting that. That's right. Okay. Yeah, you should definitely do that. That's it. Actually, doing that will increase your chances of getting a girlfriend. That's how it works.
Shut the hell up.
You should really watch Black Mirror. Or I call it Blirrer. So what do you think of the whole corporation thing? And obviously the man who always plays the bad guy, I forgot his name. He's in the Star Wars Rogue One movie. Do you remember his name? I forgot his name.
Oh, the movie, his name is Nolan Sorrento.
Yeah, Sorrento, that's right.
And Ben Mendelsohn?
Oh, Ben Mendelsohn, that's right.
Oh, Benson. Okay.
Mendelsohn, yeah. He's a good actor, man.
Because he has an H, like S-O-H-N.
Yeah, he's, where's he from? I think
he's British, right?
No, he's not. I think
Australian,
yeah. He first came on in a movie called Animal Kingdom. That's when I saw him first. Anyway, I think that's him. So, yeah. So, what did you think of the whole villain thing and the whole plot of the political, like, not political thing, but it becomes like a race against time, even though you can really take your sweet time with it if you want. What do you think?
Well, yeah, but I mean, I don't think you can really take your sweet time because once you get all the keys and everything, so.
Right. But you like that stuff? You like the villain overall, the way Artemis works against the villain in such a, the whole, you know, the rebellion, you know, the underground people that are trying to get them off their backs, off the Oasis, things like that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I thought I needed something more. I don't know what it would have needed. But the main problem I have with Artemis is just really how she backs out from something important. So we're about to get into spoilers. But before that, I just want to say that there is a love story between that emerges, as you can imagine, too. It's really obvious from Wade and Artemis. Or I should say Wade and Samantha.
Parzival.
Yeah, right. Whatever names. The two main actors. And it's funny because she has this great scene when they're trying to look for the second task. When he's like just saying "I love you" and we, you know, all this stuff. He's saying all these things, and she's like, "Whoa, bro, you don't even know me. I could be like fooling you. I could be, you don't know who I am. You don't know
how I
look
like.
I could be a dude, right?" Which is so true. I mean, how many catfishing is happening? You don't know. And the kid's just jumping into it, and I'm like, this kid who's coming from this certain background, this certain type of, like, the kid grows up, and you don't get a whiff of how he would resent the way he's been growing up to think such naively about what is love or what is romanticism or what is, you know, the one person for him. And, like, I never... This is also part of the development of the character that I didn't like, because none of it connects and none of it makes sense or marries. It just goes from one to the other very superficially. And when I first saw that scene when she's like telling him, "Do you know who I am?" and all that, I loved her for it. I praised her for it. I'm like, "Yes, good. Stick to your guns. This kid is stupid. Just be careful. Don't trust him too much because he's like falling all over you." I wouldn't trust that either, honestly, if I was her. And she backs out of that eventually because the movie, of course, will do that. But I really did dislike that. I really disliked it a lot. I really wish they stuck by the guns and just kept it fucking platonic.
Right.
It would have been way more believable. Just way more believable. Or, like, whatever. Anyway, let's get into some spoilers about Ready Player One so that we can talk more freely. starting right now.
A hidden key, a leap not taken. Retrace your steps, escape your past. And the key will be yours at last. What part of your past are you trying to escape, Halliday? This is the Oasis. A whole virtual universe. You can do anything. Be anyone. Without going anywhere at all. The Oasis was created by James Halliday, and what he left behind changed everything. A contest. Three impossible challenges. The first to finish gets complete control of the Oasis, which means complete control of the future.
The contest has got to be about connecting with someone, connecting with the world. So we take it together?
Sure.
Yep.
Okay. So, what do you think of the romance stuff? How do you feel about it?
I once again comparing the two, in the book, like they don't fucking meet until like the very bitter end.
Oh yeah, you told me that.
And that's kind of cool. I kind of wish that was a thing.
You mean they meet in real life? That's what you mean?
Yes. Because here they kind of met like right after, like, you know, shit got sour after the first task.
Well, he met her soon after he revealed his first name in the game, which led to his parents being his aunt being killed.
Yeah, and the whole stack.
Right, the whole stack. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So you didn't like that in the movie, is what you're saying? Or you found
that?
No.
And then like you know how she gets like captured and everything?
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually, like, that was kind of, like, the weaker point, because in the book, it was cool, because he actually let himself be captured, and he was going to do this whole, like, takedown from the inside while he was, like, captured by IOI.
Well, that's the other thing, is, did you find believable in this movie that his best friends, the people that he's banded around with, even Artemis, will have the chops to be as good as what they are in order to get their shit done? Like, the only thing Wade has, I think, over everyone else, the only gift or power or knowledge, it's just knowledge, really, is that he knows the most about the guy who created the Oasis than anyone else. Right? That's his power.
He tries.
Who?
He tries, yeah.
Oh, he tries.
To know everything.
Right. Well, he tries to know everything, but I'm saying he knows the most of anyone in his group. And it's not like, I'm not saying everyone in his group is stupid or they don't know how to play the game. They obviously know how. But do you find it believable that his band of people are always be good enough to do all the damage that they do with this corporation, for example, being able to, you know, assemble the right amount of party tricks to use at the right time in order to get out of scrapes and such? Like, did you buy that these people were fucking MI6, were the fucking Mission Impossible team, you know what I'm saying, of this game? Did you buy that in the game? I mean, I know you swallowed it because you liked the movie. I swallowed it too because I like stuff in the movie too, but did you, now that you've been away from the movie now, do you buy that?
Yeah.
See, I don't. Everyone's too good at what they're doing.
These are people that have been literally, religiously playing this, doing this nonstop. They've sunk in the hours to be really good at what they're doing.
Yeah, but I feel like a lot of people have. Like, a lot of people.
Yeah, but okay, so let's say a lot of people will take pictures, but the ones that have the real passion, the real drive, they're the ones that are going to, you know, take it a step further. They're going to become, like, great photographers, not just, you know, little point-and-shoot things.
So you're saying these are the great photographers of the Oasis?
Exactly.
I don't know. I guess that seems pretty convenient. I don't know. Okay. Fine. I'll give it to you. I don't have enough to go against it. I don't remember the details of all the movie. Anyway, so my problem with Artemis is that once they meet in real life, she kind of accepts them. And I think that the movie at that point bestows Wade this grand sense of a hero, like this big heroism thing. Like, he got on a pedestal, and I didn't even know the pedestal was in the area for him to get on. But before I knew it, he blinked and he did that whole big announcement to the world of Oasis, right? He sent that whole thing and that led everyone to come and attack the castle, right? The third challenge. Right. I know that the movie needed to get there. This like another big development point that I did not see that kid doing. Like, I can see the kid being furious about what the company's doing, being furious that he's not able to get the chance, for example, to try the challenge for himself. I get that. But I don't see him also being like this, I don't know, uniter. Like, it seemed like out of the blue for me. Do you feel the same or no?
I mean, kind of, the whole thing is kind of a big deal. So, you know, I think he would have, you know, being the first person to solve some of these things.
No, I get that.
He would be,
yeah.
He would have that clout, you know, and everything.
No, I get this. I get his knowledge is there, and he has the ambition, right? I get that. He is a nerd about this one particular subject, and this one particular subject serves him best to get these quests done. I get that completely. And I know he's definitely gone far and beyond to get there. I feel like, again, the movie, I don't know if he qualified to do as good of a job at everything he did to, like, get other people to help him, for example, or get as lucky as he did. You know, sometimes it was just luck, I guess. But I was a little surprised the movie thrust a lot upon him, gave him a lot more heroic qualities than I thought he had, you know? That's all I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. It's like little things, but also resulted in a bigger thing. But let's talk about something cooler. What was your favorite, like, sequence or moment or geek boner, I think you called it?
I mean, honestly, one of the parts that made me chuckle the most was when the guy became a fucking Gundam.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying that.
That was awesome. And then I like how, like, when you had, like, that, like, balls-out, like, battle at the end, you had, like, the Halo Spartans, and, like, you saw, like, the real-life version. It was, like, a bunch of, like, little kids and stuff and everything. And I'm like, of course, little kids would be the Halo Spartans, because that's, like, who fucking invades all the Halo games. These, like, 12 to 13-year-old boys that scream the most crazy obscenities at you.
Oh, really? I've only played Halo 2. It's the last game I played, and I don't remember shit. That kind of thing, those little details do make sense. I like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny because...
Like, everything around, like, the whole... any room that they're in, you know, trying to seek everything out, like... just want to see, like, what little things that they drop in. Like, oh, look, maybe there's, like, a Rush poster, that Dungeons and Dragons, or what's this, what's that? Mm-hmm. Like, what was that from? I should know this. It's like a big test.
I feel like I got, like, 90% easy.
Because you're old.
Yeah, I am. My favorite little moment, that it's not my favorite scene or anything like that, or even my favorite action scene, because it's not connected to an action scene. But I forget who enters the scene. Someone is getting, like, transported into the battlefield. Well, they're being transported into by Firefly, the ship. I in the movie theater, I was like, oh my God, it's Firefly. And that's like my big geek moment right there. And Lexi was like, I don't know what that is. But yeah, that was my little moment. You know, the Gundam scene is, you know, I've never been a big fan of Gundam, and I've only seen a few episodes, really. I'm not the biggest fan. But that scene was just too badass. It was, like, and also the fact that you're fighting against Mechagodzilla is very nice. Also, I feel like some of the things in the world doesn't work as well as I thought it would. Like, for example, when the Iron Giant comes out, I love that movie.
Never seen it.
Oh, you never seen it? My God.
Nope.
I'm sorry, Lou. You should really fix your life. Like, you should just do something.
Shut up.
Do something. Anyway. Okay, so you haven't seen the movie. But those who have seen the movie can attest to this. The Iron Giant has a lot of weapons. That machine can evolve to any kind of like threat almost. I mean, that's the whole point of the movie in many ways. It's this gigantic gun who's like this nice gun, essentially. He's like this nice guy who has like these crazy defense weapon systems. And the movie only shows just like one, you know. I feel like, I don't know if they knew what he's capable of, and like what, and I know that maybe that's not the point of the movie, but I thought that every character and avatar you embody, you kind of have what that thing has. Like when I saw Tracer in a scene in the movie, she was, you know,
cool.
She was like fast speeding through everyone, you know what I mean? Not everyone can do that, right? So, but she's Tracer. So if she embodies Tracer's, I don't know, I feel like they missed something by not taking the Iron Giant to the full capacity of Iron Giant. I mean, he could have still lost, but the whole point is that Iron Giant has a lot of shit on him. But I really like that scene. It was very nice. That sucks for you. I'm sorry. I wish you'd seen the movie. You would have been geeking out a lot more, because they show the Iron Giant like when it was built, when it's being built, and then you see it in action, and you see it like destroyed after, right? Yeah, I'm surprised. But my favorite scene overall, though, is the Shining scene, and that's where that's where Spielberg really does his magic, because like you could tell it's his, that's his thing. That's what I think, that he chose to make this movie just to make the Shining scene. So for those who don't know, I'm sure a lot of you do. Back in the old days, Spielberg and Kubrick, who did the Shining, of course. They used to be, not like best friends, but, you know, friends and colleagues and whatnot. And the movie AI was actually like a rough draft script that Stanley Kubrick was wanting to make before he untimely passed away. And so, he's, you know, Spielberg's a fan of him. And so when he did The Shining, he did such a good job recreating all of that. And the whole, like, 237, the fact that these kids did not know what movie they were in. And
well, H didn't, because H doesn't like the horror movies.
Right, H doesn't like horror movies. I know that. I think Artemis did know some of the stuff, and then obviously Wade knew everything. But I like how the movie plays it to where, like, if you know this movie as well as one does, then you know exactly what's going to happen. But it doesn't deter from the fun that the scene is providing. But if you don't know, even more so, like, imagine if you didn't know that the fucking river of blood was coming out, or you didn't know that the woman in the bathtub.
I knew that was coming out.
Right? And the twins and shit. Like, it's all very good. Very, very good. Very, like, crowd-pleasing in my theater when I saw it. So, yeah, that was my favorite scene for sure. Now, well, did you have a favorite scene? Did you mention a favorite? Was it the Gundam scene? Is that what yours was?
Then, and like anytime they had the huge scenes with just a bunch of people, I just wanted to see everything that they got their hands on.
Yeah, I definitely want to put a lot of pause when I get the Blu-ray. I'm just gonna pause every time, like, who was in this scene?
Just do like a second by, like, frame by frame.
Right, right. I'm sure someone's gonna make like that super cut on YouTube. Like, use all the references in the order, right? Anyway, so I have some problems with the ending, as of course I do. One of them being that, well, I always said the love whole thing, that, you know, love triumphed in the end. I'm like, okay, fine. Didn't like it, but whatever. It was heading there anyway. One thing I didn't like is that Ben Mendelsohn's character, the main bad guy, who was like it's really funny because he was like an awesome corporate guy, because like he is not a fan of the 80s stuff. He doesn't get all the references, and he has to have someone plugged in his ear, like, telling him shit.
Yeah, he tells him everything.
Right, like, he's a fake. He's a poser. He's a poser trying to win something that only a fan should win, right? Based on the game design. Right. But he's trying so hard to win because he has the money, but he doesn't have the fanboyness. So I think they missed a big opportunity with him. You know, when they flash back and he was an intern for the Oasis project? I think they made a big mistake not showing us any side of humanity to his character. And also, like, if he was there from, like, you know, the building of this company that was going to make this awesomeness, like, why not show him to be a fan? Like, why do they show him to be so slimy from the get-go? Like, why do they show him at all from back then? I feel like they try to meet us halfway on something that didn't work. Like, either this guy wouldn't have been an intern or whatever, or low-level employee to this gaming company, if he wasn't a huge fan of the people who were making it, or at least the references that the people who were making it are making it for. Like, I feel like he should have been either a fanboy that got lost along the way, which would have been better, or...
Incredibles?
Like The Incredibles. Yes. That's an awesome... That first half of that movie, or the beginning 20 minutes, is an awesome beginnings of a bad guy because of what happens after. It's a perfect opening to... Yeah, that's exactly... Thank you, Luke. It's the best answer I could have thought. Watch The Incredibles, and then you'll hate this movie more.
Yeah.
I feel like they lost an opportunity. Do you feel me on that? Do you understand where I'm coming from on that one? Because I think they missed
something. I kind of get you.
Because I think they just made him two-dimensional. Like, he had nothing. All he had was just greed. And not only have we seen that a trillion times, but it's like even the greediest person comes from something. You know, like, it didn't make sense. I wish they paid more attention to that. But besides that, the whole thing with the gaming thing at the end and, you know, him signing the thing over. Sure. It was fine. Very crowd pleasing, at least in my theater. And, I really wish he shot him. You know, like, it didn't make sense for him not to shoot him when he got so far and he was so close, you know, in real life when they were in the van. It didn't make any sense. Nothing in the movie was told me that he would resist not shooting him. Nothing in the movie was telling me that he would stop himself from doing it. Like, that he would accomplish and finish this mission of greed or anger or whatever he was going with. Like, I feel like the movie made a mistake because we didn't know enough about him, or the movie shouldn't have scripted it that way. The movie should have scripted it of him barely missing him at the end as opposed to being right there for like a whole minute and not shoot him, you know? I don't know. Those are my problems with the movie, I guess, now that we're at the end of the movie. But anything else you want to say, Luke? Anything else you want to highlight or cry or decry about or something?
No.
Are you sure?
Yes. I love this movie. I think it's making my number one this year.
I really hope it doesn't. But that's okay. So that's it for Ready Player One. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, though, we're reviewing what movie, Luke?
I don't know.
You pick these movies.
But I don't know the order. I Kill Giants.
We are doing that one. That's the right one.
I know.
I mean, you had a 50-50 shot of getting that right, so at least you got it right. So I Kill Giants. Stay with us. Find out what that's about.
Barbara, I want to get to know you a little bit more. Do you have many friends? What about your sister?
I play your dragons or whatever if you ask me to.
That would be hilarious. What are you doing? What's it for?
There's some serious stuff going down. I find giants. I hunt giants. I kill giants.
Cool.
Yeah, that's it. Dark omens are totally cool. A giant comes to the place and takes everything from you. And when it's done, it's like anything that made your life good was never even there.
Giants aren't real.
Then why are you sweating?
And next we have I Kill Giants. Barbara Thornton struggles through life by escaping into a fantasy life of magic and monsters.
Oh, that's a short... Shorter than
I thought.
I thought you were going to keep going.
That's
what you said. Short synopsis. No. Okay. All right, man. I Kill Giants. My first question is, why did you pick this movie and how did you find this movie?
iTunes and Google.
Okay.
I saw the picture on the iTunes, like, oh, new release. And I'm like, what the hell is this?
Like the thumbnail?
It's like Google, I Kill Giants. Huh?
Like the thumbnail? Like you were scrolling?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I just saw like a little girl, or like, I saw like a female character with like little bunny ears and it has like this huge axe thing.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this looks weird. Then I Googled it and saw that it was like a comic book that was being made into a movie.
Oh, it's based on a comic? Actually, that makes sense. I can
a
see it.
A graphic novel.
Graphic novel, sorry. Whatever. I didn't know that, but it makes sense knowing the movie. Yeah. And you picked it on the strength of that synopsis, I guess?
And then I looked at it had like a little thing that said it got pretty good reviews. So I was like, okay, let's check this out.
Hey, no, I'm glad. I like when you guys go off the beaten track, you know, go off the mainstream and pick a movie that few people have heard of. I like that, you know, because that's what I do all the time. I like when you guys do
that. Right.
Without me telling you and shit and prompting you. So that's good. What did you think of this movie, man?
I liked it. I thought it was really good. It, you know, kind of tackled some really dark issues. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's pretty good type coming of age movie.
Yeah, I mean, I know that's easy to say that, but I wouldn't call it a coming of age movie. What's the age of the girl in the movie? She's in grade school for sure, the main actress.
She's like 12 or
like 12, 13, maybe preteen, something like that. She is, first of all, I think she is the leading role as an acting performance, pretty good. Better than I would have thought.
I'm surprised, yes.
Right?
I hate kids, you know?
Yeah, I know you hate kid actors, but she is, she's particularly, also, the fact that you hate kids, another reason why you're going to be single for a while.
Shut up.
Anyway. She's really good. I really liked her performance. I liked her best friend in the movie. I liked Imogen Poots, who plays the older sister in the movie. She didn't do a lot in the movie, unfortunately, but I liked her in the movie. I liked Zoe Saldana. I forget her name. The girl from Guardians of the Galaxy. I liked her pretty okay. She wasn't like bad. She wasn't. She was good, but not bad. This movie has a lot of good acting in it. And I like the story. I like the themes. It's a fun movie. It's a fun movie for a very dark and depressing subject, for sure. But I don't know if I call it a coming of age, because it's more like the movie is about... I mean, it's pretty obvious, guys, so we're not spoiling a lot here by saying this, but it's about trauma, and it's about getting past something big that happened. We're not going to spoil this part, obviously, but it's about something big that happened in her recent past as a little girl, and she is coping by imagining or telling people that she's imagining these giants that are in town that she is in charge of slaying to save everyone. Right? That's basically the nutshell of it, and the movie does a lot of like creative. And, you know, a lot of, you know, special effects involved with it, things to make you see her point of view and make her see the point of view of other people around her. And the movie does a good job of marrying both. It's not very subtle, though, so don't expect, like, a lot of, like, art house subtlety going on here. But the movie's good, though, for what it is. And it does a good job of putting you in her perspective. Do you agree with that?
Right. I mean, because when the movie first started...
Yeah,
I thought that this might be an entire like fantasy movie. I wasn't sure.
Right, me either. Even for like the first 30, even when they first gave the first hints that she is, it's all in her head, you know, or the first hints mm-hmm. that it's not real. Even after that, I was still like, it still could be the other way. Like I don't know, you know, like
right. I was like, maybe they just don't see it, and she can like
right, know. Right, right. Like some sort of Harry Potter thing, you know, where the muggles can't see and don't know anything. And she's the only one right. that does. And it's also also the fact that the actress and the character, I forget her name. What's her name in the movie? Do you have the thing up?
Sarah?
What's her name? Sarah? Okay. Sarah's thing in the movie is that she is so convincing.
Oh, wait. Barbara.
Barbara. I'm like, that's why I was just like, Sarah? I wasn't sure. Sarah's her friend's name, right?
No, I didn't know. That was Sophia.
Sophia, wow.
My bad. I just
awful.
Brought Sarah out of, I don't know
don't
where.
Don't worry. Epic fail. I'm fired. Let's go back here. Barbara, the reason I was still, like, iffy on whether or not it's real or whether or not to believe anything or whether or not to, like, fall for her in her fantasies, like, fall for what she is seeing and believe that it's real. The reason I was struggling with it is because she does such a good job at convincing herself that these things are real,
that it's real,
that it's so important and vital for her to train, for her to set traps, for her to find out what these giants feed on and how you can track them, all this information that that you kind of want to believe her, you know, even if in the heart of hearts you don't, but like you want to so bad that you kind of sometimes you kind of do a little bit. I did for a while there. I believed the first 40-30 minutes of this movie. I was I was under the impression that this could all be real in the movie setting. And obviously, it's not. But it's a really, because it's more about her like her family life, her school life. It's about important, real things, just disguised as this fantasy movie. I feel like this movie is really easy to spoil or really hard not to spoil. So, do you want to say anything else before we get into it? Like, as far as want to recommend it or what kind of people would enjoy this movie?
That's the thing. I don't really know who's going to enjoy this movie. I liked it, but I'm weird. You liked it. You're super weird.
You don't have to add the super. I could just be weird, right?
Yeah. I think I have to emphasize it.
You have to emphasize that. Okay. That's good to know.
So I don't know, because with the way this movie just kind of came out, you know, with VOD and like some a limited theater release, and it's going to be Blu-ray next month, it's kind of weird. Like, I don't think you see a big marketing push or anything for it.
Well, all the more reason I think we should pay more attention to what we say and how we shape our opinions on this movie. Because, like, Ready Player One, every movie podcast is talking about it. Not many are probably talking about this movie. So if we're going to get other people to at least be informed on this movie, and at least through our opinions, I mean, and if we want to recommend it, I want to make sure we do a good job of doing so. Because a lot of people are not going to hear about this movie if it's straight to VOD. And a lot of people automatically diss movies that go straight to VOD.
And it's a shame because this movie is actually really well. Like,
I think it's
shot
made
and everything.
I think it's made
even
well.
Even the CGI.
Yeah, I think the CGI. I mean, I think definitely a bigger budget would have made things a little smoother. But otherwise, it's
pretty
good.
Yeah, the Titan.
Yeah,
like more rocky
exactly.
or something.
Yeah, like the Titan or the Giants. You know, but other than that, it's all really well made, I think. And I'm in agreement. So I think movies like this, we should definitely pay a little special attention to what we say in our opinions, just for that reason, you know, because, you know, you never know. Someone's going to look out there, like, what's this movie about? Like, it might look at a podcast and, like, oh, I killed giants and they'll see our tag. And I want to make sure that we're one of the few tags that are hopefully are telling people straight up about this movie. So with that in mind, and we hope you we recommend it. So we hope you watch it and then join us into the spoiler session, which we're going to start in right now.
We're going to get in trouble. We're going to save this town. Should have taken the second bait. Something else must have grabbed his attention. There is no way this wouldn't work. We have to go back. We'll say we got locked up by accident. Hold on. You need to understand what we're dealing with. Giants aren't real. Then why are you sweating?
All right, so Luke.
Okay.
How did you feel about how everything overcame? Like, what was your? Okay, maybe I should ask a better question. What is your favorite relationship of Barbara? Either do you like her better when she was by herself? Do you like her better when she was with Sophia, with the psychologist, with the sister? What did you feel about her in her relationships in the movie?
I kind of like the relationship with her and Sophia because to Sophia everything is new. You know, this whole world of, you know, giants and titans and everything.
Yeah.
So I think we get a lot of more from that, where we also learn about the world as Sophia does.
Yeah, some of that for sure. Especially when she's at the graveyard. Right. The graveyard site. Well, not graveyard. She's giving her the protection and she has to cut her hand, you know, or her finger. I forget what it was. Yeah.
And then you have the teacher or
the psychologist, right?
Psychologist or whatever, therapist, whatever she is.
Yeah, therapist, yeah. I forget.
Yeah. So she's, you know, she's just trying to reach out and, you know, kind of understand, you know, Barbara, but Barbara's very closed off. And I think Barbara has this issue where I guess she doesn't want people to get close. So, like, immediately, like, the first two times they talk, she already hits two strikes.
Yeah. Two strikes against her, like, her ability to stand her or talk to her, right?
And I think this is just like a defense mechanism for the girl, because obviously,
definitely.
When we learn what when we go towards the very end of the movie, what happens, you know, this girl has her fucking walls built.
Yeah.
I don't think she's trying to get hurt, as you know, or she's avoiding that pain. And I think those, you know, anytime she comes across that huge pain, that's when we know you see like one of the giants come out. And you know, when she comes across her house and she's got a husband and like a little kid, and she's like, you know, go hug your kid before everything dies.
Yeah. See, she's like a mini Goodwill Hunting. You know what I'm saying? Like, this broken down person who's very intelligent. Like, that's the thing. The movie...
super cynical.
The movie... right. The movie does a really good job of showing you her intelligence and her ability to be resilient. And like, all the good characteristics that we like in a person, she has them. Except that she's using them for something negative, and she doesn't know it because she's a young kid who doesn't understand what's going on, really. But she'll never admit that to you because her walls are built so high and so strong that you'll never fucking penetrate. At least, obviously, you do. We're in spoilers, so you do eventually, and we're glad for it. Like, when the movie completely shifts to about being her to realize that she's using this giant's, you know, Titan fantasy mythology to cope. Cope with the fact that she can't see her mother who's dying in a bed, and much less go to the second floor where she's at. Like, mm-hmm. is you make her, by the end of the movie, you want her to forget about the giants. As cool as it is, I the movie convinced me, at least, that to want her to be better, psychologically speaking, get past this trauma and go talk to her mom, than to see another giant fight. That's how I felt by the end of the movie. So when she got there eventually, it was cathartic for me. Cathartic enough, anyway, for me to like, you know, cheer her on and get, you know, get psychically better, you know. Because the fact that she was so good at defending herself with the adults, with the bullies, and with Sophia, who is like a brand new person, almost a fish out of the water character. The fact that she did such a good job defending herself that way, and, you know, giving all these details to this fantasy world that somewhat exists in Dungeons and Dragons, but also doesn't. I think shows how intelligent she is, and it's a really good way to show it how much she can be. She can be a force to be reckoned with, you know, if you mess with her. I really liked her. I really liked her character a lot.
Yeah.
How did you feel about that? About, you know, did you want more of the giants by the end? Like, what did you think of anything of the trauma stuff or how it all shook out?
I thought it was really good. I was just trying to see if there was like at one point in the movie, I didn't want to like overthink it, but like, was there a correlation? Like, you know, this giant is for like this person. This giant is for this person.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Titan was going to be for the mother,
right?
Because I mean, that's going to be the biggest one,
right? I mean, the movie, there's a scene where she's describing the different types of giants, right? Is that the opening?
Mm-hmm.
I forget if it was the opening.
That's when she's talking to Sophia, right? I believe Sophia.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was with Sophia. It wasn't the opening, right? The opening is she's like in the woods by herself. Yeah, that whole thing when she's describing the giants, it was very cool. And then obviously when you think back on it after you see the movie, you could see easily how the Titan is the fact that she won't talk to her mom. And also the fact that their dad has been dead or left, at least, right? That's the implication. I don't know.
Yeah, he's just not in the picture at that point. So.
And there's a whole baseball thing with Kowalewski.
Yeah.
Which is perfect because that's another element right there. That's the Kowalewski part, I mean, at least what I took, is the father element. And the fact that the hammer didn't work when she needed it the most, when she was crying and ready to vanquish her foe, which in this case was the bully at the time. It didn't work for the same reason why the father is not there in her life anymore. Either because he left or because he died. And it's very sad. And again, it's one of those things where you see back on the movie after everything happens. It adds to it, you know. Or do you get what I'm saying? Did it feel that way for you? Ish.
I suppose I do see where you're coming from. So yeah.
Well, I mean, a lot of this stuff is, it came like a day after I saw the movie. I saw this movie like 5 days ago. And so I'm glad I didn't see it just now, because I don't know if I'll have all these opinions on it. But it gave, after a day or two of thinking about it, that's kind of what I came away with. and I liked it. It's a good movie. I really, it's also very, whatchamacallit, it's very contained. Like, it's not, you know, everything's in this town, of course, and it's the woods, the school, the house, right, the beach.
Yeah, her little sanctuary by the beach.
Right, her little sanctuary.
This girl's really creative. She spends a lot of time outdoors.
Yeah, she's very creative. Also very, like, she does a lot of things that, you know, if I was a parent or if I saw this in real life, I'd be like, get the fuck down there from those trees. You're going to hurt yourself. You're going to kill yourself doing whatever the hell you're doing. And, you know, that whole train yard fight scene with the giant that she kills with electricity. Was very cool, and I almost wish that, like, if that was her last, the last time she let her delusion, like, work her magic. Like, it's almost the last time she let the delusion, work on her as much as, you know, before. Because
right. What I want to know is, like, because as crazy as that fight scene was, like, at the end where we shift back to, like, the real world.
Yeah.
And it's like, is that train car still on fucking fire? What the hell did she do?
I don't know. And I wanted a second character to go there and see it. Because Sophia was there, I guess. But she didn't acknowledge the fire. She just acknowledged Barbara walking away from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then, I don't know.
But then you had, like, the beach scene.
Right.
Where, like, she's, like, on that, like, lifeguard thing.
Yep.
And the Titan smashes that.
Right.
And then, like, the following day, you can see it pans out and you see that it's been smashed in real life.
Right. But also it could be the rain and shit, the torrential wind.
It could be rain.
Right. And that's the thing is that the movie does play a little bit into that.
It plays on you because you're not sure, like, wait, was that really happening or how is this happening?
Yeah, but by then, it's like you're more convinced that it's all in her head or at least her imagination than it is in real life. But it does play with you in those moments. And I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. Did you like that? That it was like a confusing thing?
Yeah, because it still kept me at bay. Like, is it still in her head or is this girl have, like, some power that we don't know?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean,
it just messes with you and it's cool.
Yeah, like almost like there's maybe that third option where she believes it so hard that it made it happen, you know? Like,
right, she willed it to fruition.
She willed the Titan, right, to destroy it or something, you know? That would be cool, right? Actually, that's not cool. That's kind of fucked up. Anything else you want to see in this movie? I know it's shorter than usual, but we did give the major plot points, and we did highlight the acting, the visuals, which I agree with. Mm-hmm. I kind of wish we got a little more on the sister, or at least I know that the brother was out of the picture because he was just very ignorant to her surroundings, so it makes sense that she's not thinking about him. I get that.
Right.
But I kind of wish there was more on the sister. Like, I know the sister was going through some bad rap going on, and I don't know. I feel like something could have come out of that. Like, she tried a few times to get through to her or get to talk to her. She never did get that point. It's almost like she got reacquainted with Barbara after she met her mother at some point, right? Like, that's the idea. But I don't think she ever got through to her the way Sophia did or the way even the bully did, you know, in a way. But, yeah, I really dug this movie. Any last thoughts on it or any last bit of thing you might want to say to recommend it to people or to encourage it?
No, go check it out. I think it's really worth a watch.
Nice. Okay. So that is it for a shorter review, yes, granted, of I Kill Giants. We're going to move into our last film of the evening, which is a marathon pick. It is Luke's first pick of this marathon, which is what, Luke?
It Happened One Night.
Wait, what happened one night?
Exactly.
Oh, shit. We're going to find out. Stay with us.
In a pig's eye, you will. Hey, listen, monkey face. When you fired me, you fired the best news hound your filthy scandal sheet ever had.
Ooh. Hey, listen, you wouldn't know a newspaper story if it reached up and kicked you in the pants. Yeah, sure. I got all your copy. Why didn't you tell me you were going to write it in Greek? I'd start a new department.
That was free verse, you gas house palooka.
What the dickens was free about it? It cost this paper a gob of dough, and I'm here to tell you it's not going to cost us any more.
Gordon.
Huh?
Did you know he reversed the charge on that call?
What? Why, you... Say, listen, you. When you get back to New York, you keep far away from this office. You're fired. You don't work here anymore, and you never will.
I say.
Oh, so you're changing your tune, eh? You're a little late with your apologies. I wouldn't go back to work for you if you begged me on your hands and knees. And I hope this will be a lesson to you.
Oh, boy. Yes, sir. Did we tell that baby?
Give me any more of his lip, huh?
When you tell him, tell him, Pete.
I guess he knows now how I feel about his job.
I'll bet he does, too.
Is my chariot ready?
Oh, your chariot awaiteth without it, almighty king.
I am ready back to the king. Lead on, sire.
Make way for the king.
It happened one night. A spoiled heiress running away from her family is helped by a man who is actually a reporter in need of a story.
That's it?
Starring the infamous Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert.
I think it's Colbert. Maybe Colbert. Whatever. Let's call her Colbert? Whatever. Claudette. Yeah, this is a huge Oscar winner movie you picked.
Mm-hmm.
Won Best Picture, Director, maybe Writing, I think, Best Actor and Actress.
Yeah, Adaptation.
Adaptation. Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because it was such a low-budget movie, they didn't actually expect it to do anything.
Yes, this is back then where the bigger the budget, just basically the more people saw it. That's, I mean, I'm not saying it was like one-for-one, that ratio, but it's like a lot of that. Yeah.
Right. I think this is the Your Name of 1934.
Huh. Elaborate. What does that mean to you? What does that mean?
Because it kind of came out, you know, and as like a small thing, but then the more people saw it and kind of word of mouth, it became huge.
Oh, I see what you mean. You mean in the way of how it became popular and how people saw it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you meant like in the love aspect. I'm like, what? How do you mean? I don't know what you meant. Gotcha. Okay. You're right. I mean, I guess that's what happened. As far as, you know, what the point of this marathon, like we said, is Alpha Classics. So we're reviewing older films that are inspirations or have spawned remakes over the years and decades. Mm-hmm. What are some of those inspirations that you found on your as to why you picked this movie? You mentioned some of them to me earlier.
Right, because this came out in the 1930s. Then in 1945, they made a musical called Eva Knew Her Apples.
Hmm.
And then, again, in 1956, they made a remake called You Can't Run Away From It.
Really?
Huh. Mm-hmm.
Did they ever make a...
Yeah,
go ahead.
Then the Sure Thing, 1985 movie starring John Cusack, has very striking similarities to this movie, according to the fine people of Wikipedia.
Huh.
And there's been and it's been adapted into, I think, five Indian movies.
Like Indian from India?
India, yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Including Chori Chori, Naadu Gyara.
Don't hurry yourself.
Ilhaike Manta Nahim.
Gesundheit.
Ciao Papo.
Yeah. Thank you. That's my dog's name.
And the last was a Tamil one called Chandrahayan, and a Kannada adaptation, Hudugata.
I'm surprised you're still going. Honestly,
that was a 2007 remake.
Okay, nice. So those are more direct or slightly indirect remakes, but it's far to say also that this movie is because of its popularity, and I think it might be the first quote-unquote, I mean, they didn't have indie movies back then per se, but this is the first low-budget movie of this kind to get as much attention as it did, right? At least the first in a long time. Let's just say that. I know you call me old, Luke, and I know I've seen a lot of old movies. All jokes aside, there's a lot of holes that I have not seen from movies back then, so I don't know enough to give you an apt description of what was popular or what wasn't back then. But
right.
I feel like it is, so I'm just going to say that. And I will say that I can see how a lot of formulas were developed into a lot of modern day or even like 80s, 90s rom-coms that took over our cinemas, right? And a lot of it probably came from this movie and movies like it. So it is a pioneer in many ways to how romantic comedies, road trip movies, things like that, came to be for the future. So I applaud you, sir. Good job, Luke. It's a good pick. When you picked it, I was like, ooh, that's a nice one. I almost yelled at you because in our old show, this is a little inside baseball for you fans out
yeah.
there. Inside baseball. In our old show, which was called Everything's Opinionated, we reviewed this movie.
Episode 110.
110. Wow, you knew the episode number?
Yeah. I looked it up.
You looked it up. Okay. Yeah, we reviewed this movie as part of it was a marathon, wasn't it?
It was one type of marathon. I think
it was the AFI.
No, this was
no?
I think we were making somebody watch a movie that you think the others are going to hate.
Really? Did I pick this movie?
No, I think Ralph picked it.
Thinking that you would hate
thinking
it?
Thinking we were going to hate it. Or you might have picked it thinking we were going to hate it.
I don't know.
Or the vice versa, we were going to like it.
Oh, yeah. We were really... Yeah, our marathons
we did some crazy stupid shit.
We did some screwy things. Anyway. So we had reviewed it already. I almost said no because we reviewed it. But, of course, it was a different show. That show was canceled. So I figured, why not? And it's a great movie. So, Luke, now we know why you picked this movie. Good references. I didn't know half of those. How do you feel about this movie? What did you think of it?
I think this movie is a fucking American staple.
Nice.
It's been referenced in so many, in pop culture and things of that nature. Like, if you watch movies like Spaceballs, you know, the wedding scene.
Yes.
It's pretty much the same thing.
That's right. They mocked that movie. That's right. I forgot about that. Yeah. Spaceballs.
And then I feel like you said, there's so many things in this movie that, you know, other movies just try to, you know, I guess copy. Like the whole hitchhiking scene.
Yeah. Yeah. There are definitely copies of that for sure. I think the Farrelly brothers made fun of that whole, you know, with the thumb pointing out thing. I feel like. Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, this movie is... it's funny and heartwarming. And a lot of the funny that comes from the movie, you don't have to... I mean, some of it is obviously dated stuff. Like the fact that, you know, $10 is valued crazily higher than...
Oh, my God, yeah.
For example. Like, obviously, that stuff is there because it's the 1930s. But, like, you don't need to be from that era to understand the jokes, the humor, the wholesome nature, the fact that these two people are slowly but surely falling in love from the first time she falls asleep in his lap on the bus. There's a little something there.
Right.
You know, and even though he fights back a lot, like a boy does, you know, you can't fool anyone, bro. You want to be next to this girl. And it's very good. It's very universal, a lot of the stuff in the movie. Like, you don't have to get the references.
By the way, $10 yeah. in 1930 is like $143.
Oh, shit, really?
Damn. I looked up the inflation.
So the $10 he gave that little boy was like over $100?
Actually, it's like $149, yeah, 2018.
Damn, he just saved that family.
And then some.
Yeah, and then some. Yeah. The really magical thing, and this is more in spoilers, is this third act thing where certain problems and bad timing issues happen that I think is done really, really well. And they even set up a lot of that stuff in advance in ways you didn't. It's like really good foreshadowing about character development that I think the movie pulls off really fucking good by the end of the movie. We'll get to those points later. But let's talk about the acting because it's the main thing, you know. I mean, Clark Gable. Have you seen many Clark Gable films? I mean, he was a big guy. He was George Clooney and Brad Pitt combined back then, so...
No.
No?
But he is amazing in this movie.
Yeah. I realize his opening scene, his opening scene for us, the audience... is really great.
In the phone booth.
Yeah, in the phone
yes. booth. Yes. And I love the little joke. He's like, yeah, there's a man biting a dog.
Yeah. That, okay, speaking of references you won't get or jokes you won't get, that one I don't get. But sure, right? That one you have to just like, okay, let's just go with it. But yeah, that opening scene. Like, so that might be the... I don't know if that's the first time in movies that they've ever shown like... you know, the whole thing where they keep talking after they hung up so they can, you know, just look like they're standing up to the other person or whatever. That's really good. I think that might be the first time because I've seen that in a few times in movies. I don't remember where exactly right now, but I've seen it many times. I really like that scene because it shows, you know, the stubborn nature of him. This shows that he's a reporter. It shows his vocation, of course. It shows that he is a bit of a souse and a louse. Like, he drinks and he's kind of, like, dirty overall. Not like dirty like that, but he's, like, you know, very loosey, but very, you know, moral, amoral or whatever. He has a lot of, like, rules and whatever. And virtues, I guess, maybe. And then when you see the girl, what did you think of the girl's scene? Her intro is first, right, I think? Yeah.
Yeah, because they're on the ship, right. And she's kind of, like, refusing to eat and everything.
Right, right.
Then we, like, have the father.
Yeah, I think... What do you think of her first? And I'll tell you.
At first, I wasn't sure. Like, she kind of seems like kind of like she comes from like a wealthy family. She's got everything she wants, kind of pampered life.
Yeah. Did you not like her at first?
Well, I mean, she seems like she kind of like has no consequences really because of her like affluent life. So you know, she just wanted to go and get you know eloped with a. You know, a pilot or whatever.
Yeah, he was a king. A king who was like a big aviator guy.
Oh, I don't know. His name was just King.
Oh, his name was King. He wasn't like...
No. I don't think he's really... His name was King Wesley.
I didn't... Okay, so... Okay, so someone named the children King, and that's okay?
I guess.
Okay. Okay. I mean, I think you're right because I never got any royalty off him when I met him. But, like, but he also looked kind of rich. And I don't know. Whatever. He's a big aviator guy. I can hear you. Okay. I think what this movie, the opening is supposed to show you is, like, you're not supposed to really love these characters yet. Like, even though Clark Gable, whose name is Peter, I think, in the movie, Peter Warren, he's fun to watch and he's, you know, but he's like he gets fired in the opening, but he gets fired in a funny way, right, that we like. Even though that's cool and you can definitely see yourself maybe having a drink with the man, you don't really see him as trustworthy. Like, I don't. As the first time I saw it, not that I remember that first time, it's been so long, but...
Yeah, he can be sketchy.
Like, he's sketchy. He seems, you know, like not trustworthy or maybe irresponsible at least because of the way he got fired and the way he doesn't, you know, he just wants to save face to the strangers around him. Like, you have this certain impression. And the same thing with her. You see her as completely spoiled, very brat. And he calls her brat almost every other scene, so... it helps with that too. And yeah, she's just complete, not opposite of him, but completely different, but also bad. Like, you don't want to be with her. You don't want to be in the same room with her. You don't really want to talk to her. You don't really empathize with her either because she's this rich, spoiled brat who just wants to marry some guy who's also this aviator debonair guy. And you don't care because you're not as rich as her, right? That's the whole point. And I think the movie does a really good job of walking that back to making you love these two by the end of the movie. And that's really the whole point of the movie. Like, our relationship with the audience, the audience relationship with these two characters is more important than them two falling in love, almost. Like, I feel like the movie does a really careful job of getting you to be in their shoes or at least empathize with them in a positive way. In order for you to like buy why they would love it, fall in love with each other, so yeah, very good, very good. So what do you think of this, the road trip aspect? I mean, you're a big fan of road trip movies.
I guess there's some good ones out there. I think this one's really cool because you know because it took place so long ago, you don't have like the common technology that would kind of pretty much destroy this entire road trip in like a heartbeat.
Right. I like all the antics. Like, my favorite scene of this movie is when they're in their first hotel and they have to pretend to be like the husband and wife.
And they're just arguing at each other.
Right. And how they pick up on each other's cues. Like, he is obviously very clever for coming up with it, and she is clever for riffing the way she did and keep it going. And they both, like...
I think one of the best scenes.
Yeah. It's really, really good. Very memorable, and it always makes me laugh out loud. And I've seen that scene many times on YouTube, too, when I show people, like, oh, you never seen this movie?
You know, and here's the thing. Like, honestly, had this movie been made, like, even, like, I think 5 months later, I don't think we would even have the same movie.
What do you mean?
Because this is a pre-code Hollywood movie.
What does that mean?
Because it literally, back in like the 1920s and like mid-1930s, the movies that were coming out were fucking crazy. They had like, all like women were like shown to be, you know, super seductive. There's a ton of sexual innuendo, profanity, drug use, you know, infidelity, all that kind of promiscuity, all that stuff. But then because people were, I think the church kind of also saying, you know, these movies are kind of like ruining everything, blah, blah, blah. There was a code that came out in 1930. But because they didn't really start enforcing it until mid-1934, all the movies before that kind of got away with all this stuff.
And by this stuff, I mean the craziness that they thought of back then that was crazy. You're talking right. about the fact that he showed like, legs, for example, right? The fact that...
Right. Or when he's like carrying her across the stream, and so here, hold my bag, oh. and she grabs the bag so he can slap her on the ass.
Yeah, slap her on the ass, that's right. Yeah. So I guess that was the risque things that they had to stop at 1934. That's good. That's right. good. I didn't know that. I know that the code, is that what you call it, the code? I know that it existed. I didn't know that's when it came out, though. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, today this movie looks and feels very wholesome. But it does the same thing, like, if it was a rated R version of it today, like, it does the same thing that would have shown. If anything, it does it simpler by not showing it, because you know what's happening, you know what they're referencing, you know that, you know, certain things are what she wants to do, like the fact that she wants to marry King so badly is because also that she's young and flighty and wants to have sex with someone because she hasn't, you know. And the whole idea of Walls of Jericho, which is introduced in that the first time they
they share a room,
right?
So he puts up the blanket.
Right. You know, and
which is actually used in a, I think, Bruce Willis movie.
Oh, really?
I don't know, but he actually says, like, oh, yeah, I saw this in an old movie once.
Oh, really? Now I want to know. Okay. That's cool. Yeah, so, like, things like that. You know, you don't need them to take off their clothes. You don't need her to, moan passionately to get it.
Bandits, the 2001 movie.
Bandits. No, missed that one. Anyone? Maybe I'll watch it one day. Okay. So, yeah, I really liked it. And Clark Gable it's really good. Like, I mean, he's played, he's played variations on the same role. It's not like he's asked to do some demanding stuff for sure. But, like, he never really steps away from this area. Like, he's done movies like this, where he's played characters kind of like this. I mean, Gone with the Wind, I think, comes out... I think it was a 30s movie, 100%. Anyway, whatever. It came around the same decade. And he is playing another person who's very sure of himself, who's confident, stubborn in a way, but more like resolved. Like, he knows what he wants. And this one, he's very similar. Now, this one, this character takes a little long... It takes actual some time to get there. But once he knows and thinks about something, he knows and thinks about it. And he also likes to talk a lot in this movie. Like, he likes to boast things that aren't true or that aren't exactly true. And in other characters, he's played that a lot, too. Like, he did in The Misfits, for example. Like, that one, he kind of, you know, he plays a character where he does the same thing, only in a worse way, and he becomes kind of a drunk. So, Clark Gable, I think, this is like middle-of-the-road Clark Gable as far as his roles. And he does it really, really good, of course. But I feel like he's done this kind of role before. I know you haven't seen his movies. I'm just giving a little color to some of the movies I've seen before.
Quick side, Oscar, you're breaking up really bad. I don't know if it's your headphones.
Oh, it's possible. Can you hear me better?
No, I think they're like dying or something.
They might be dying. All right, don't worry. I'll switch them. You talk about the movie for a bit while I switch headphones and stuff.
Alright, what's there to say about this movie? I think it's super awesome, especially like some of the things that they encounter, like the lack of money, and so they have to pretty much go about finding a way to get money or trying to hitchhike. Then you have them, they're discovered by the one guy, Shapley. So Shapley, you know, kind of goes to, you know, Peter. He's like, hey, you know, I'll split the 50-50 with you. You know, the $10,000 reward that was being put out by her father, you know, for her to be returned home. So Peter on the spot makes up this whole lie, like that he's part of the mafia and that the Shapley guy could probably, you know, be a good asset to them. And he's like, oh, do you have a gun? You have a machine gun? No? I got some in my suitcase. I'll give you one because we're going to have a shootout with the cops later on just to get this guy to back off.
Yeah, that was a big first sign of his, like, his ability to just fucking cope and like, you know, assess the situation and react to it. Yeah. I really hated the Shapely guy. The Shapely guy is the kind of annoying salesman kind of guy who's just like very weaselly too. Like the fact that he doesn't even say he has a family until like he's being threatened. Like he would have totally like had an affair out there. Like that's the idea. Like he's very sneaky that way and sneaky, but also very spineless as we find out. He's Shapley's an annoying character.
Yeah.
A lot of people.
So, that was cool.
A lot of people highlight the bus scene when everyone's singing. What did you think of that scene? You know what I'm talking about?
Right. I think that was like a kind of cool scene. Just kind of that's kind of them just being like, kind of growing fond of each other. I think like they're both relaxed.
Yeah, you're right. That's exactly. And also, it shows like the how people can like relate to each other in a certain situation. Like they're on a bus, same bus, different reasons, of course. There are different like levels of class a little bit between them. Not like anyone there is ultra rich, obviously, other than the girl, of course. But like there's like all these kinds of people that can get together in a nice little way by singing one song that everyone knows, you know? And it's very simple and it's very cool, like sense of community, you know, even though they're all traveling from one community to another, right? Technically.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I like that. It's very nice. Very cool.
I also like how when they had to kind of sleep in the hay that one time.
Yeah.
And then like in the morning, like Peter's got all these like carrots and she's like refusing to eat them.
Yeah.
But then as like the day goes on, she like starts nibbling at them.
Yeah.
Just kind of.
Yeah, at some point.
I think she's breaking out of her, like, I'm higher class type of, you know, mentality. It's like, okay, you know what? I gotta eat.
Yeah, I mean, for her, the movie is, like, humbling her, right? That whole experience is just, like, about her being humbled into seeing things a little more realistically. And for Peter, I mean, for Peter, maybe it's a little more complicated a little bit to pin down what he gets out of the road trip other than, you know, finding out that he loves her. I think for him, it's like finding hope again, like not being so cynical about something that he hasn't been, you know, he hasn't given himself the chance to like care about, because he says in one scene before, you know, before that he falls for her is that he tells her that, you know, that's, it's all a big mess, right? That he tried once or he tried several times before and that he sees no hope in love and things like that. Right? He says something like that. I forget what exactly. Do you know what I'm talking about? What scene?
I don't know what he says.
Yeah, but you know that happens, right? That's what I'm saying. He gives like his negative viewpoint on love and relationships and his character development is about fucking letting that shit go and finding that love and saying yes to it, right? Now, before going any further, I want to go into spoilers real quick now before we get into the whole third act stuff and the whole plot stuff. There's a lot of plot that happens. So let's get into it. Spoilers,
I mean,
for...
shit's...
What?
A movie from 1934.
Yeah. Right, spoilers for, like, how old is this movie now? 80-something, whatever, 90-something. Starting right now.
I suppose makes everything quite all right.
Well, this? Well, I like privacy when I retire. Yes, I'm very delicate in that respect. Prying eyes annoy me. Behold the walls of Jericho. Maybe not as thick as the ones that Joshua blew down with his trumpet, but a lot safer. You see, I have no trumpet. Now, just to show you my heart's in the right place, I'll give you my best pair of pajamas. Do you mind joining the Israelites? You don't want to join the Israelites? All right. Perhaps you're interested in how a man undresses. You know, there's a funny thing about that. Quite a study in psychology. No two men do it alike. You know, I once knew a man who kept his hat on until he was completely undressed. Yeah, now he made a picture. Years later, his secret came out. He wore a toupee. Yeah. You know, I have a method all my own. If you'll notice, the coat came first, then the tie, then the shirt. Now, according to Hoyle, after that, the pants should be next. Here's where I'm different. I go for the shoes next. First the right, then the left. After that, it's every man for himself. With me, Brett? Ah, don't be a sucker. Good night's rest will do you a lot of good. Besides, you got nothing to worry about. The walls of Jericho will protect you from the big bad wolf.
Alright, so just for the hell of it, I mean, spoilers just for in case, you know. But the spoiler stuff that I'm talking about is that, man, the amount of work that this movie had to do to realistically put in all those bad times, like the bad timing stuff, you know what I'm talking about? Like he can't say he loves her when she begs him, right? And that night,
right?
And because he has to, he thinks about it and he makes sure, and then decides because he's a man that he needs to have capital first, like he needs to provide for her. So he goes to New York. And in that process, things go worse and worse and worse and worse.
Uh-huh.
What did you think of all that plot?
Oh, that was the worst thing, because literally, he leaves the people at the little hotel thing that they're just abandoning them, but they find her, so they kick her out. So she thinks she's being like just kicked out, thrown to the curb,
right?
Even though she kind of confessed, you know, her feelings.
Yeah.
So she says, whatever, I'm just going to go through life as planned. And then, you know, he's kind of trying to rush back to get her, you know, in time. And then, you know, just right at the train tracks, you know, he sees her leaving with her, you know, I think fiance.
No, with her dad. Father. With her dad, yeah.
Oh, her dad, yeah, at the time. So I think he just feels defeat at that point.
Right. It's amazing how they both refused. Like, they both don't know enough. But also, and they both get hurt about the same thing in the wrong way. Like, it's very, like, I know that a lot of movies back then did this. It's very common in a lot of the big movies, or at least, you know, what people consider the important movies back then. And, but the way this movie, like, a lot of that stuff is foreshadowed. Like, the fact that fate put them together so easily and, you know, a few times before they decide to hook up for this road trip. That once love is professed, it's like they have to prove it now to fate. It's like they're proving fate that they could actually meet up when fate is against them, seemingly, by giving them all these wrong turns and U-turns and shit. It's very strange. It's very like it's a very strange viewpoint to test their love in a way, because you know it's gonna mm-hmm. you know they're gonna fall in love, and you know that the father says it at the right time. But like the fact that he was interrupted right before he tells her that, you know, he actually loves her. He just told me that. He just won the $39, not $1,000 or whatever. Like,
and Spaceballs.
Right, Spaceballs. It's, and, you know, they use the wedding car as a getaway car. Very nice spin. It's all very good. And I like how at the end of the movie, you know, technically the last scene we get is with the father. Because we don't see them after that. She runs away. Let me see if I get this right. She runs away, and then we get the scene with the father after that, right?
What do you mean when she walks away?
No, when she drives away, when she's like, I'm not marrying this guy, she drives away, she gets the getaway.
Oh, yeah, because he told him, like, the getaway cars, you know, back there in case you want to change your mind. And that makes me really happy.
Right. And so, but after that, if I'm not mistaken, the scene after that is, like, her dad, right, paying off the guy over the phone, like he says over the phone.
Right, he had to go through with the annulment.
Right, so after she drives away, the movie, in a very funny like way, I mean, doesn't go back to the couple. It's funny because we don't see them together, both knowing they're in love. I mean, we don't have to see it because we believe it already, but it's very strange now that I think about it that the movie doesn't show you them reconnecting again. Because you get to scene with the father, and then you cut to you got to a conversation of, you know, saying that the walls of Jericho are coming down. Right, that's the message he sent. And then you see them, and then you go back to the hotel where they went, and it's nighttime, and then the blanket falls, but you don't see them. Huh. It's very strange, right?
It makes me want to just take a quick thing and rewatch it real fast to make sure.
Right. Well, anyway, the point is that it's a very strange. I mean, it's you don't need to see them, I guess. That's fine. And I wonder if there's like a weird reshoot there that happened. But they do a really good job of not needing to see them. Because I bought it completely. It was a nice way to end it because it ties in. Using the father, it gives you information about King Wesley, how it's not a problem anymore, how he's happy for his daughter, how the cryptic message he gets about the walls of Jericho is something that the audiences can understand. It makes sense.
It's awesome.
It works really well. I'm just surprised now that I think about it that we don't see the couple, like, you know, meet up and kiss and, you know, whatever. Really surprised. I wonder if the movie was, like, held back or told that it couldn't show any of that. I don't know. I'm so curious. It's like the whole movie is about the struggle of them getting to know each other and fall in love, but not actually be in love, you know? Like, the movie doesn't want to show you that.
Right.
It's interesting.
I get you. I think it's just that thing, you know. I think it was just kind of a more fun way, because, you know they're about to do the nasty when the lights go down.
Well, yeah, I mean, definitely. Let me see here. Fan Capra did this movie, and he's done... I mean, the guy's done a lot of big movies, man. He did Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, It's a Wonderful Life.
I know of it. That movie sucked.
Which movie?
It's a Wonderful Life.
Oh, you don't like it?
No, and that movie was actually like supposed to be really horrible when it came out. The only reason that, I guess, they always played it every Christmas time because it had such low ratings. Everyone just kind of said, yeah, let's just put this on or whatever. It just became like a staple movie.
Yeah, it did. I mean, but say what you want, that movie is humongous now.
Does it mean it's good?
I mean, a lot of movies, you know, get like a lifetime of achievement after they're made. Like, you know, it happens to a lot of people. But Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, I actually like a lot.
I do want to see that one day.
It's good. It's really good.
Did they ever remake it?
I'm sure someone did. Yes, I'm sure it's been remade a few times. I mean, when you think of political speeches told in front of like, that movie is like king of that. But yeah, I think Frank Capra is very good at showing you relationships developing in a movie over a course of time, and I think that's what he does here really well. And I really recommend it to anyone. I know it's an old movie; it is black and white, but there are plenty of great, superior editions of the movie that has been remastered, as Luke said already, that you don't have to see some shitty DVD version of it. You can see a really good version of it now. And we have the technology. We can be built. So,
because they redid this entire movie pretty much frame by frame in 2013.
Right, and this is film stock, man. It's good. It feels like... It feels heavy, you know, in a sense, in a heavy...
Heavy. There's that word again.
There's that word again. Heavy, yeah. So we highly recommend it. Anything else you want to highlight? A specific scene or moment or a theme maybe that I haven't brought up that you maybe had thought of more than I did?
No. Although, I'm not going to lie. Claudette looks really good in that 90. There's that little scene where she's like slipping into his pajamas, but she's like got taken off her clothes. I'm like,
yeah, I mean, to them that was probably pornographic back then, right?
Oh man, people were popping boners in that theater, probably.
Yeah, nowadays if a girl like shows off her leg, it'd be like, whoop, that's nothing.
Right,
go faster.
She's gonna like show you her insides. Like, here's my soul through my vagina.
Oh my god, why would you say that? Why? Why did I open that door? Why? All right, so I believe that's it for Happened One Night. A very classic film that we enjoy a lot.
Recommended.
Definitely recommended. I'm glad.
So much that I actually bought it and I own it on iTunes.
Yeah, and you hate old movies. You're like, black and white. What the fuck, bro?
Yeah, but this is restored. It's in 4K now, so it's acceptable.
Oh, it's restored. That's why. Oh, I see. Well, we're going to have a lot more old movies coming up with our other marathons. I've been thinking, now that we're at the... Let's see. Wait, hold on. Let me make the proper exit here. Why not? So, that is it for our show. You have been listening to Another Movie Podcast. As far as the marathon, as I was saying, now that we have officially on our ending cycle here, I'm going to announce the 9 movies for this marathon that we're having in case you want to join us in the future. And, of course, we'll tell you what we're reviewing next time. So, Luke's 3 movies. Do you remember your 3 movies, or do you want me to name them?
You can name them.
Okay.
I know one of them is It Happened One Night.
Well, I know that. So, we just reviewed that one, It Happened One Night. Your other one you picked for this marathon is House on Haunted Hill.
Oh, that's a classic.
And Ben-Hur. Those are the 3 films you picked. Ross 3, we reviewed...
I believe I put... Which year did I choose Ben-Hur?
What year?
It's been like, yeah, I think I chose a specific... I think I chose the 1959 version.
I mean, there's only one Ben-Hur.
No, there's 3.
Well, the original is what we're talking about, so, right? What?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think,
restored, sure. I don't care whatever. We'll figure that out. I always thought it was the original. The one that won all the Oscars and shit. So there's that one. Anyway, Rob's 3 movies. One we reviewed already is Seven Samurai, which you can find as the last show we made. His other one is Rear Window, a Hitchcock movie. And then we have a Marx Brothers movie called Duck Soup, which is probably the most popular movie. My 3, I picked different movies based on what you guys picked. I didn't want to pick the same filmmakers, and I wanted to jump in genres. So my 3 movies are The Shop Around the Corner, which is another kind of a rom-com.
Wait.
What?
Didn't that become...
The most recent remake? No, not that one. Have you seen You've Got Mail?
Yes.
That's a remake, for example.
I've never seen You Got Mail. I just know of it.
Yeah, it's with Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. Anyway, that movie sucks. But The Shop Around the Corner is really great. Anyway, we're going to do that movie. We're also going to do Double Indemnity, which is one of the first noir movies, you know, give or take. And then we're going to do a musical, The Red Shoes, which is pretty awesome. Black Swan, I think, took a lot from that movie, if I'm not mistaken. But not everything, for sure. The Red Shoes is still a different movie, a very different movie. Anyway, so those are my 3. And as I said, that is it for our show. Thank you so much for listening and to join us in for our marathon. Hope you join us in next time. Next time in 2 weeks, I get to pick the movies. And those movies...
Well, as long as you pick Isle of Dogs, we'll be fine.
No. Isle of Dogs is the bonus episode. That movie's already picked. You and I might review it, honestly. Anyway, so next time on April 13th, at least that weekend of, we're going to be reviewing Avengers, The Infinity War, of course. How can I avoid that movie? And we'll be reviewing an indie movie, or more of an indie movie. What?
That episode comes out on the 28th, right?
Did I say 13th? Oh, yeah, I got that wrong. 27th. April 27th, sorry.
Oh, shit.
I got that wrong, sorry. April 27th.
I might not be there.
Well, that's okay. We'll figure it out.
I might be in transition from point A to point B.
Well, so. Too bad for you, bitch.
Unless we do it like Friday night.
That's okay. We'll figure it out. Don't worry about it. Anyway, right. Avengers Infinity War, which is obviously a big movie. We'll be reviewing a movie called Thelma, which I know very little about. I'm not going to spoil anything. But it's a movie that's on VOD right now. It's a movie from this year, I think. It's a... semi-indie, made by a big corporation, big production anyway. I don't know. That's the little I've heard. And then the marathon movie for my own is going to be The Red Shoes, which I own on Criterion Collection as well. But I'll rent a copy for you to watch, Luke, if you can watch it. If not, no big deal.
All right, I'll do my best.
Yeah, we'll figure that out. So that's going to be it for our show. On Twitter, you can follow me personally, as well as on Letterboxd. It's Armen Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Luke, where can people find you?
At Slothmaster Luke.
And that's on Twitter, right?
Of course.
Right, and make sure you check out our website, otherpodcast.com, to find everything we have on this show. Every single thing. And thank you, and make sure to, if you haven't reviewed us on iTunes, you know, if you ever have a minute, peruse that, check that out. Do that, for it is the best way other people can find us in this fucking internet world of radio. Anyway, until next time, I am Oscar, and you are?
Luke.
Sweet. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. What the hell was that?